Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Clay Travis joins us every Friday to kick off the second hour of the show. Outkick the coverage, outkick.com. Clay, what's up, man?
Doing well. How about you?
So, Clay, should Derek Mason worry about his job future at Vanderbilt given this season?
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, if you look at Vandy, I mean, I think there's a legitimate threat that they're going to go 0-8 in conference. They already lost to Purdue. They already lost to UNLV. You may have their schedule in front of you right now. I think they have one more out-of-conference game.
Yeah, they play ETSU in November.
Yeah, so that should be a win. But I think right now, if I were betting on Vanderbilt's win total, I would go with 2-10. And if you go 2-10, 0-8 in the SEC, and you have a new athletic director who isn't necessarily invested in your success and has already proven that he's willing to fire a guy pretty quickly. I mean, I think a lot of Vanderbilt fans feel a little bit surprised that Bryce Drew got fired as quickly as he did when the wheels came off his program in 1 year. I think if you look at Derek Mason and the status of this program right now, 2-10 would be hard to justify bringing him back.
Clay, I don't love looking at possible replacements while the job is still filled, but here we go anyways. The hypotheticals are fun sometimes. Malcolm Turner hired a guy from the NBA in Jerry Stackhouse to coach the basketball program, and it was a surprise when that happened, outside the box, and went to the pro ranks. What would you think if Malcolm Turner went after Jeff Fisher to be the Vanderbilt head coach, if in fact that job was open?
I think it would be really intriguing. I you know, we had Jeff Fisher on the podcast, the Wins and Losses podcast I do, and he was fantastic. And I know he wants to continue to coach. I think the immediate question that a lot of people would have anytime you go get a pro coach is, what can they do from a recruiting perspective in terms of relationships with high school coaches, things of that nature. But in terms of just knowing the game of football, I don't think there's any doubt that from a coaching perspective, he could do pretty well. I would be intrigued to see what the list for Malcolm Turner would look like if he does go into the college ranks, and also who would be available and what would Vanderbilt pay. I think those factors would be substantial in terms of who would be interested in the job, because I've always said, if your job is not necessarily wildly attractive, and I think it's fair to say that Vanderbilt football is not a wildly attractive job, the way you attract candidates who would be impressive is by being willing to spend a substantial amount of money. Now, Fisher's interesting because I don't think he'd be trying to make the most money possible. You know, he's made a lot of money coaching already. I think he'd just be excited to come back in and coach football again. I mean, I think he wants to do it. And certainly he's got, I think the longer Jeff Fisher is away as Titans coach, the better his career looks. It's almost a little bit like Bill Fulmer, where with the end, you remember the final couple of seasons when things weren't going well, and you forget about all the time when you won a lot of games. And then if you bring in somebody and they don't do very well, and certainly that has been the case with the Titans, who's never kind of risen to the level of success that Jeff Fisher had, you look back on those coaching days with a fonder memory than maybe you did on the day that they ended.
I bet you another guy who could be interested in the Vanderbilt job, if he does not surface as a head coaching NFL candidate now, would be Jim Schwartz.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I wonder about having a current NFL defensive coordinator who's a commodity in the NFL at that level. What would you think of him compared to Jeff Fisher, who doesn't have maybe the name recognition, but has the currency, to use that word, in two different ways?
Yeah, the Jeff Fisher one is a little bit different. The Jim Schwartz, I wonder on some level whether that's like breaking up with somebody and dating somebody else who's very similar, because while it hasn't necessarily proven to be true, the idea with Derek Mason was, this guy's a defensive guru. and we're going to bring him in, and we're going to be good on the defensive side of the ball. Now, that's kind of faded over the years as Derek Mason has continued there, but I do think there might be some argument for a offensive system that is going to be more exciting to watch, just because, you know, on the theory that you tend to hire a person who's not similar to the person that you just fired.
Yeah.
I do think what you're hitting
on. Fisher's that too, defensively.
Yeah, right. But I think Fisher is maybe, he's not necessarily as connected to one side of the ball as you think of with Schwartz, because it's been so long since he's been a coordinator in many respects. Now, I would say this too. I think what you're hitting on is, I mean, there's a guy like Rex Ryan who lives here, right? We've kind of become a cradle of coaches. There are a lot of people who have success in coaching that have ended up making their homes here. And I think you can't underrate, if you go that route, the desire to which, I was talking with you last night about this with Roe for your podcast. I think being a head coach for Vanderbilt in Nashville is a very desirable job for a couple of reasons for some people. One, you can be a head coach, but you're not necessarily a huge celebrity, right? It's not as if, it reminds me when Lane Kiffin went back to be the head coach at USC. I think he liked the idea of leaving a college town like Knoxville for a big city like L.A. because he was the 478th most famous person in L.A. The head coach for Vanderbilt can have a life. You know, you are way down the flowchart of famous people in the Nashville area, and you can go out to dinner with your wife. You can take your kids to go see a movie. There is a quality of lifestyle that I think is underrated compared to some college towns where the coach is, you know, he's the most famous person in the community, but he's also, it's impossible to have a normal life in those kind of settings. And so I do think that the Vanderbilt job has that appeal, and the city of Nashville certainly has that appeal. Remember the other factor here, and I don't even know, we're in the process of finding a new chancellor at Vanderbilt. So I would think that person would also be instrumental whenever that person is going to be named in the decision that Malcolm Turner could make, but also in the decision to accept a job like this, that whoever got the job would be. I tend to think still that Malcolm Turner also will be looking in the mold of the last couple of coaches at Vanderbilt, which were James Franklin and Derek Mason, coordinators who had never had head jobs before. So I think there's probably a lot of coordinators out there, maybe guys that are really kind of up and coming. Here's one that I would put out there. I have no idea if he would be interested. Look at what's happened with LSU's offense. Would 30-year-old, I think his name is Joe Brady, who's basically come from the Saints and been given all the credit for building that attack at LSU and changing the culture of what their offense looks like, would he be a guy that would be a total flyer that you might take, but you say, hey, we want to get an exciting offensive brand of football at Vanderbilt. Let's go get the best young offensive mind that we can find in college football right now. I'd be intrigued to see what the short list would look like, but he's a name that I think could emerge this offseason that a lot of people might look at because everybody's looking for their version of Lincoln Riley in college football, and I'm not saying that he's that level, but he's the kind of level right now where Vanderbilt could take a chance on him.
Clay Travis joins us every week, and it's presented by the Home Loan Expert. Clay, what can you tell us about Ryan Kelly and his team?
Get hooked up now. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. You need to get a great mortgage, a low rate. It is moving into the holiday season, believe it or not. Everybody spends way more money than they were anticipating in November and December as you try to get all of your holiday shopping lined up, as all the events, all the travel, all the expenses come raining down on you. Why not put your financial house in order before the holidays even start? Mortgage rates are insanely low. You can also get pre-qualified for a mortgage. It takes as little as 5 minutes. TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
Clay Travis with us. He's presented by TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Clay, am I right in thinking you would have stuck with Marcus Mariota at quarterback?
I would have, just because I think the Titans are in an awkward spot now where, what do they do at the quarterback position? I think that Ryan Tannehill got enough snaps in Miami for you to know that he's not the guy. And so it seems to me like you have two guys now that you know are not the guy. So I don't know what the purpose is of the rest of this season or even what their plan is now going into the offseason. You have two guys who are I think probably high quality backups at this point, neither one of whom is under contract for the years ahead. And I feel like there is so much uncertainty around the Titans franchise now. Are you going to go back in, and just speaking as a fan, in 2006, they drafted Vince Young third overall. In whatever it was, 2008, they draft Jake Locker, I think it was eight overall. And then 5 years ago, they draft Marcus Mariota two overall. And we're going to go back to the drawing board again and start all over with a team that seems built to try and win now with a brand new quarterback and not having a lot of faith in one, a rookie quarterback coming in and likely being very good in year one, and two, frankly, not having a lot of faith in the first round draft success of John Robinson. What have you seen from the development of Marcus Mariota that makes you think, oh, they're going to go get a first round quarterback and he's going to be great? And I feel like we're just kind of going through the same schedule all over again. Similarly, I don't think you commit to either Mariota or Tannehill. I don't know what their value would be on the open market, $10, $12 million a year, kind of use them as a stopgap. To me, it just creates total uncertainty at the top position in all of sports. And I don't think you gain very much from the process. Like, let's say Tannehill goes out and plays well. It's an 8-8 team. Arguably, all you're doing then is creating an opportunity for yourself to have a worse draft pick when you have to go draft a new quarterback. You know, people can be upset with the direction of the Miami Dolphins franchise or you know, the direction of the Bengals franchise, but at least they have clarity. They know what they're going to do. The Andy Dalton era is over in Cincinnati. The Dolphins don't have an era to even point to. I just think the potential payoff here is relatively small. I guess Tannehill could come out and be remarkable, but I mean, you've already got all of the evidence you need, I think, from Miami that he's not. So to me, you're just kind of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Clay, how do you view John Robinson's job so far with the Titans? And kind of, you talked about the awkward state that they're in. Maybe the one saving grace for John Robinson right now is he didn't draft Marcus Mariota. So he hasn't had a chance to draft the franchise quarterback and fail at doing that. So he does have that going for him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can help me with remembering all the Titans draft picks that he's been responsible for, but I believe he took the first two, right? He took Adoree Jackson and he took Jack Conklin, right?
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
Conklin and Adoree Jackson.
Corey Davis.
And Corey Davis. I think basically everybody that he's taken in the first round, I think we've talked about this before, is not right now worthy of a first round pick. In other words, Jacksonville just traded Jalen Ramsey. And they got two first-round picks in exchange for him. Even if you think Jacksonville did not do a good job taking advantage of Jalen Ramsey's talent, having a player that you drafted who's worth more a few years after you drafted him than theoretically he might have been worth on the day you drafted him is a big deal. So my concern is that so far, and we'll see what happens with the guy from Mississippi State, the new defensive tackle, Jeffrey Simmons, whether he turns into a good player or not. But in general, everybody that has been brought in has not fundamentally altered the trajectory in any stretch of the imagination of the franchise. And in particular, a lot of his free agent signings on the offensive side of the ball are disasters. I mean, I think it's fair to say that Roger Saffold, the signing and the $40 million or $39 million that was given to him guaranteed, is a disastrous free agent signing, right? That is a unmitigated disaster already, and we're only 6 weeks into it. Adam Humphrey's got a lot of money, and he's been virtually totally absent. I don't know what the process is there. Right now, I believe I'm correct that Deion Lewis has the 10th most guaranteed money of any running back in the NFL, and he has been an unmitigated disaster as a signee. So, yes, the defense is solid. But I think there are major issues. I question whether Arthur Smith was ready for this job. I know people want to say, oh, well, it's Marcus Mariota's fault. I think it's convenient to find a scapegoat. I tend to think that Tannehill will come in and the offense will look about the same because there's not that much space, not that much gap, not that much difference between Mariota and Tannehill. And I also think that with the way the offensive line is blocking, Tannehill is going to get hurt, and then Mariota is going to come in. And
yeah, we thought Mariota was going to get hurt, too, and it didn't happen.
But his credit, that's the best thing you can say about Mariota. All the sacks, whatever it is, 25 hits that he took, and a lot of them were big hit jailbreaks in the pocket. You know, I think that Tannehill will get hurt, personally, if you look at his history. I think Mariota will probably come in for and get hurt, too. And then, you know, Titans are going to be running Wildcat with Derrick Henry, which will be quite the offensive comeback.
Hey, but so, I know this premise is inconceivable to you, but let's say you and your colleagues on Lock It In had a bad week. They just kind of stepped on each other's toes. You made bad picks all week, and a lot of your viewers lost a lot of money. The producer cut too early to commercial a couple of times. It was just a rough week. You know, you'd be better next week. You've been great the week before, all of that stuff. And your fans tweeted in. They said, you know what, you guys, even though you showed up to work and you did your job, you should not get paid. Your money should go to charity. That would be a ridiculous thing for anybody to say, right? You showed up to work and you know, you may have done a crappy job, but you showed up to work and you did your job.
The NFL would be drastically improved if every week one team didn't get paid. The team that did the
worst job. That's a game show, though. It's not business.
The team that did the worst job did not get paid for the week. I think fans would respond well to that. And the Titans' offense last week, in my opinion, was so bad that everybody, coach, player, they should have to have, and maybe instead of not get paid, you have to donate your entire week's paycheck to a charity. I think that would be phenomenally popular with NFL teams doing that among NFL fans.
I love watching you go from realistic businessman to fan with cheesy
ideas. Clay's very charitable. This is what we're finding out.
Fan with
very charitable
ideas for his underperforming team.
I think that it was such a bad effort from top to bottom that it is inconceivable that that Arthur Smith, in my opinion, or Mike Vrabel has done a good job this year. And I understand, look, everybody wants to find one thing that's wrong, right?
People get paid whether they do good work or bad work if they have contracts.
Well, certainly with the Titans, they get paid really well with doing bad work.
Exactly.
Thanks. I want John Robinson negotiating against me for my next television contract. I'll walk out of it with $180 million.
And then last night,
if you have a bad week, I'll call for it to go to charity.
Last night, you got Mahomes going down.
I'd give a lot to charity if I get $180 million from John Robinson. That's Clay, about what I would make, by the way. If you compare my television contract to Roger Saffold, I'm like, worth $180 million.
Clay, thank you, man. Always enjoy it.
Appreciate y'all.